Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Fetters, Scott Eklund. It is Colorado week, a little bit different than last week with Oregon week, but 6 o'clock kickoff at Husky Stadium, and the game is on the Pac-12. Is it on Pac-12 Network or Pac-12 Washington?
Just as Pac-12 Network.
Pac-12 Network, so we'll talk more about that on Saturday when we do our pregame show, but, you know, just a lot of conversations that we had to have. Got to have with Coach DeBoer, the players, the coaches, and still a lot of focus on that Oregon win, how big it was, how important it was, and a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. And had a chance to talk to Coach DeBoer on Monday, and, you know, I'll tell you one thing. He's the same guy all the time. He doesn't change, does he?
No, he had kind of turned his focus toward Colorado. I mean, he was enjoying the win, although when we were walking up after doing interviews today, they were playing the highlights for all of the
It looked like they
staffs.
Had like an all department meeting going on,
and he was standing in the doorway just grinning ear to ear. So you can tell that they're savoring this one, but they also know Colorado. If Washington loses their focus, Colorado can snap up and beat them. So that you got to win this game. It's like what happened with the Michigan State win. I said it afterwards when they played Stanford. You go out and you lay an egg against Stanford, it takes away all the goodwill of that Michigan State win. You cannot follow up a game like they just played and lose to a team like Colorado.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that came out of Monday was they lost Devon Banks for the year. You know, they're already thin losing Julius Irvin for the year, and now they've lost Javon
Banks
for the year.
Devon.
Jordan Perryman, he's not 100% healthy.
No, it hasn't been since the first game of the season.
You know, and he's out there with the injuries he's dealing with and got his hand all banged up again against Oregon. So I think that was the biggest thing to come out of that, where they're going to still be a little bit shorthanded back in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, talking to the players and coaches this week, I mean, there's no doubt that everyone saw it against Oregon that they had to bring in a true freshman. Javion Green had to show up, and he got burned by Troy Franklin on the one bomb, but came back and showed a lot of confidence to stick with the task and eventually finish it out. Elijah Jackson played some snaps in that game. We talk a little bit later. I talked to Juice Brown kind of a little bit about that scenario and kind of what he was asking those guys to do. And you know, yeah, they gave up, 592 total yards of offense to Oregon, but at the end, the bend but don't break defense held, and they were able to come away with the W. So that was really, really huge, and clearly they're banged up on that defensive end. The fact that they were able to, you know, basically not have consecutive starting secondaries until the Oregon State game, and yet our 8-2 is pretty remarkable on its own, and it kind of shows you the resiliency of this particular team and just how they kind of continue to grit and scrap their way through a lot of adversity.
Yeah, and talking to Coach DeBoer, he got an idea of what the rivalry means. This is a completely new coaching staff, other than Scott Huff, but there's still a lot of staff members within the staff that are used to the rivalry. Aaron Knotts, Justin Glenn, the trainers, the equipment guys, they're all familiar with it. But, you know, he seemed pretty pleased with, you know, Peyton Henry and fully understands that. So,
yeah.
But again, after the game, there was so many things that were just kind of screwy. They didn't make it easy for the media at all. And we only got Coach DeBoer for a short time after the game because the media room, which wasn't a media room, it was a media tent out in the elements, out in the concourse with a couple of hanging lights, they got turned off about 2 minutes in. So.
Yeah, but we've done, I mean, I've been down there before post-game at Autzen, and it's a free-for-all. It always has been. And so it is what it is. But the only difference is that typically we haven't been down there with that kind of scene, that kind of environment. Usually it's more like these guys don't want to be around. They don't want to be talking to the media. They just want to get in the locker room, get dressed, go to the plane, get home, and just worry about the next game. But in this particular one, I think the win probably made things a lot better.
So other than the 2016 game that they won, would we have to go back to the craziest scene was after Washington, Reggie Williams went off that one day in, what, 2001?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he went off. So.
But the thing of it is, the difference between that game and the win in 2016 and this win is when Reggie went off, Oregon wasn't a good team.
Mm-hmm.
When the 70-21 game, Oregon wasn't a very good team. They wound up that year at 4-8. This game, Oregon had a 23-game home winning streak. They were ranked number 6 in the country, and there was a lot of talk about them getting in
straight games.
Yeah, a lot of talk about them being in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So this game sucked the air out of the stadium. It sucked the soul out of the players. It sucked a lot of stuff out of that.
Yeah, well, and the three of us picked Oregon to win the game. I picked it by Oregon by 19. I feel really stupid about that.
Your season prediction's looking better.
You know what? You know what? If I have to pick Colorado this week to guarantee a win and Wazoo to pick to guarantee a win, that's what the fan base wants me to do.
If any of the Dogman people actually pick Colorado in this game, I'm gonna raise some hell. How is that even possible?
Well, I don't think Washington's gonna win by 31.
No, I don't either. Yeah. I would take Colorado in the points if I was a betting man.
But. Yeah, but anything else jump out to you from Coach DeBoer on Monday?
No, I mean, you talked about the even keel, and I mean, that's just something that we've gotten used to over the course of the year. And we have to remember, yeah, it's not the same thing at all, but he has won national championships before. He has been in big environments. You know, he's been a coach in the Big Ten. You know, so he's been in some big game environments. I don't think he's probably ever coached in something quite like that. But that said, every time when you watch the TV tape, of the game, every time you kind of went to him and kind of looking for a reaction or something, it's just like him and Penix were the same. It's just, it's almost like they didn't have a pulse. I mean, they weren't jumping around. I mean, even on the final play, when the ball hits the turf and all the guys in purple spill out into the field, he's just kind of like, hey, all right, we did it, great. Even when Peyton Henry kicked a field goal, it was like a little clap. And he's like, all right, good, let's go. And so it was pretty remarkable because you would think, as invested as those coaches are in that kind of a result, for him to have, I would assume, either the foresight or the discipline to just kind of understand that this can change literally on a dime, like when Penix throws the pick. Sudden change play, all of a sudden everything changes. It's like for him to have that kind of mentality and that discipline is pretty incredible.
Well, he's got a couple hype guys on the staff, so he can afford to be kind of the low-key guy. You know, Jamarcus Shepherd and, William Inge, you know, they get pretty wound up.
Yeah, I don't know. I know you spoke to Coach Inge this week. Yeah. I'd be curious to see if – did you ask him at all about what he said to Bo Nix? Because he talked to Bo Nix after the game.
I did not. I wish I would have.
Yeah, he talked to Bo Nix after the game. Yeah. He had a little heart-to-heart with him, it looked like, right on the field.
But it looked like it was more encouraging, like, hey,
keep your head up.
Keep your head up. This.
Well, I've never heard William Inge say a negative thing in his life.
Me either.
So I would imagine that was full of praise for, for what Bo did and got them right to the edge and to keep going.
Yeah,
yeah. I had a chance to talk to Jackson Kirkland on Tuesday, and he kind of agreed with me. Glad that they don't do drug testing, because myself and everybody else would have tested positive for weed if they would have drug tested us on Sunday. With as much down there, and I've made the comment a couple of times. I haven't been exposed to that much weed since I went to see Ted Nugent, Cheap Trick, and AC/DC in the Coliseum back in 1979. But the atmosphere down in Austin, maybe the weed that they're smoking down there has something to do with why it's not as rowdy. It's still a loud atmosphere down there.
It's a great conspiracy theory. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's still loud down there. They still do a great day on game day, but I think that that crowd down there is getting a little bit, I don't know if entitled is the right word, but I think they're getting used to winning.
I think it's the corporatization of things down there. You have the luxury boxes. No normal working class person can afford those things. And I think the ticket prices going up keeps some of the maybe more rowdy hooligans out. And their students were doing the thing. I'll tell you what, was it between the third and fourth quarter, like they do at Wisconsin with the jump around?
Yeah,
they did the
shout.
From Animal House. Yeah. And that looked kind of fun. I mean, it looked kind of cool. I had never seen that one.
Well, my theory on that is that, a lot of people can trace back Washington's origins to when they took that next step, obviously with Don James and the 77-78 season with the Rose Bowl. I think if you go back and look at the pick in 94 with Oregon, that kind of was a sea change for them. With Rich Brooks turned things around, going to the Rose Bowl, and then Mike Bellotti took it to another level. Chip Kelly took it to an even higher level.
And Phil Knight got involved in that time.
Right, and now, because now, what is that, 94 to today, that's what, almost 20 years, almost 30 years, three decades? That fan base at Oregon that started out that way, they're getting older, just like the Don James era fan base is getting older. And so I think that's where you start to see maybe a changing of the guard or what have you. But it doesn't surprise me that things have maybe toned down maybe a little bit, just because, again, them getting older a little bit. Also, like you said, Kim, the fact that there's an expectation now, so it's not nearly as big of a deal for them. They kind of understand that that's where they should be. So I think there's a few things in play.
And then in addition, it's at the end of the day, it's still a bowl. They've got a little bit of an overhang. The noise goes straight up. And I am not saying it's not loud there. It is. It's just when you compare it to where it was maybe 10 years ago or 12 years ago, it's not as raucous as an atmosphere. And make no mistake, it's still raucous. But like I said, I think all the weed has something to do with it.
With my tin hat still on, I would say, don't we remember a time when they used to pipe noise in?
Well, there's a difference. And I want to be real clear on this, because Cal did it too. They didn't pipe in noise. They amplified the crowd mics, and it was played through the loudspeakers back in the day. And I know it makes people crazy,
but isn't that just a different way of pumping in noise?
Well, pumping in artificial noise is one thing, but they're just...
But it is, in a sense, it is artificial.
They're artificializing it. Yes.
They're creating an artificial environment.
And we're talking, 15, 20 years ago that was happening. And I know it makes the Oregon fans crazy. I'm probably going to get hate emails.
Don't you anyway?
Oh, no. We only get hate emails when we talk about the fake injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and by the way, on that, I don't know if you guys saw this. I got a text from our Cal guy, right? And they did. He says that Oregon did the fake injury thing at the end of the half when they didn't have any timeouts. They did that as well against Cal. Mm-hmm. And Washington fans had no problem when Tosh did it against Oregon when Tosh was here. But, it's just connect the dots.
Yeah. Well, I think that, but also there were specific rules that were put in place after what Chip Kelly kind of revolutionized that whole thing, to the point where the NCAA felt compelled to change rules because of what Oregon was doing, because it was so new and it was so original. But we're, 8-9 years past that now? Almost 10 years past that? I mean, it's pretty well established what you can and can't do, and clearly what Oregon did, you can't do, but they got away with it anyway.
A couple of things that they were doing, and I don't I don't know the rule. I should know the rule. But when you, offense brings in new players, the defense can also have time to substitute. Oregon, a couple of times, was dreadfully slow bringing their defense out on the fields to
Oregon State did that the week before too.
Yeah, to kind of limit. I don't know. I mean, if you've got 15 seconds on the clock and you're sitting there waiting for the defensive players, do you get called for a delay again?
Yes, you do.
Yeah. So Oregon was dreadfully slow on a couple of those. It's not in order to, they'll probably have to do something about that because it just makes it so that the offense can't make their reads and gives them.
Well, think about this though. Yeah. If you're the defense, if the offense is going to run hurry up and the offense is going to sub, you have to be able to put your package in. Well, what if you don't have a package ready to go? Then you got to, hey, the number one package, whatever they call it, a nickel package needs to go in. Well, if those guys weren't just standing right there ready to go, they're not going to go. So they got it. They have to allow the defense the time. So if the offense is going to make their substitutions, you got to make it at, what is it, a 35-second or 45-second clock?
35 it's a 40-second
40 second clock. 40-second clock. You got to make those right away if you don't want them to lag.
Yeah, I would also say, too, you know, DeBoer, there was a comment that was made when DeBoer, when they saw the onside kick, DeBoer realized that some guys were wearing some different numbers mm-hmm. and how that affected what they saw or what they were expecting. This is the level of detail that these guys go into. And, Kim, you saw it with the screens that they were using when they were putting in their plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're clearly – because there is a 3D chess element to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that these guys are looking at it at such an intricate level and such a high level of analysis and detail that when they see little things like that, like you're talking about, like they've got to be ready for that because they've broken down. They've seen it in games, like when they did it at Cal, apparently. You know, these are things that maybe the assistants notice or the GAs notice or the quality control guys. Some of those, all those guys are in there looking at that stuff to break it down to the most minute detail that they can find. And in the end, those kinds of things help you win games.
Well, the other thing that was kind of unusual, too, is on the fourth down where they looked like they were going to fake the sneak and trying to get him to drop off, to fall off sides, and then Bo Nix eventually did snap the football. But I was listening to the Oregon broadcast, and in the middle of that, while the clock was winding down, he said, and Oregon coaches are trying to call a timeout. It looks like they maybe were faking calling a timeout as well.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. I didn't see that either. But, I mean, I know what they were trying to do because they were trying to get Washington to fall asleep.
Yeah.
They were trying to get them to just kind of relax a little bit and then try to take it at the end. And so doing it at the very end is one way to do it. That being said, I didn't see anything that in Washington's front that told me that they were lax
no.
at all or slipping. And so that's what made the decision by Nix even more interesting.
You know what it reminded me of? I can't remember what game it was. It might have been the Kent State game, but where Mike Penix comes up under center
yeah.
and looks like he's trying to draw him off, and then all of a sudden they snap it, and he goes yeah. for a first down. It looked exactly like the same thing.
It was definitely one of the early non-conference games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also had a chance yesterday to talk to Eddie Ulofosio, and a lot of people, and we talked to Coach Inge about this as well, a lot of people are saying on that fourth down play that the running back slipped. Well, the running backs tried to stop because Eddie blew it up.
Yeah.
Even if he hadn't slipped, Washington was going to stop him.
Yeah, he was going to get tackled.
Yeah.
So you can't really put that on the running back. It wasn't really a slip as much. I don't know if you can call it a slip, but
a slip. Well, I mean, he
slipped because he was yeah. going to. He was trying.
He's trying to change direction.
It was a pre-action.
Yeah,
it was a pre-action because he saw Ulofosio come between the tackle and guard. He was fitting that. Was that B gap? Mm-hmm. Whatever that is. He shot it. He was halfway into the backfield by the time the guy was on the ground. So there's no doubt that unless he's able to spin out of it or unless Eddie completely whiffs on it, which just isn't him at all.
Yeah, but that had happened many times in that game.
It had happened many times in that game, but not necessarily yeah. in that kind of a pile-up.
They had so many guys that were going to be around the ball. Even if Eddie did miss, somebody else was going to get him.
Yeah. Who did you talk to on Tuesday, Chris?
Oh, boy, I talked to Alex Cook for a long time. I think he was maybe – oh, and I talked to Henry Bainavalu.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing I got out of AC was that the thought that because of the way that they played – and, yes, the defense gave up almost 600 yards it's weird to almost even think of the numbers that they put out, and yet we're able to come away with a win. But he said just as a team, the way they were able to win that way gave them the kind of confidence to think what could have been if they had won at UCLA or Arizona State. And that he literally brought up the idea of we should be 10-0. And I was like, that I didn't think I was going to hear that from any of those guys. But he said it flat out, and I said, you know, do you think that you would have still won at Oregon if you would have been undefeated going into that game? And he goes, that's just something we'll never know. He goes, but there is something to the idea that if we had gone through the disappointment and gone through the losses at UCLA and Arizona State, that maybe we wouldn't have been prepared to deal with the way that we needed to deal with things at Oregon. It could have been a very different game.
Or maybe Oregon sees a 9-0 Husky team coming into their stadium.
Who's actually higher ranked than
Oregon. That point. And maybe Oregon says, we're going to beat these guys, and maybe they're more juiced up to get a win.
Yeah,
Kim,
you talked about that environment and how it's maybe not quite the same as it
still
used to
good.
Be. Still good. Maybe it rises to the level of you know, like maybe a Michigan-Ohio State type game when those guys are top five in the country. It could be that kind of level of game.
I think an underdog crowd is more volatile than a favorite crowd.
Yeah. And maybe
and they would have been. They would have been an underdog crowd. Yeah. Make no mistake about it.
Also, just,
Washington would have been top five.
Just real quick, with the 598 yards that Washington gave up.
592
was the most yards that Washington had given up in a victory since 1998 to an Oregon State team led by Jonathan Smith back in the day. So when Jonathan came in and tore them up. But, you know, Henry, you had a long conversation with Henry Bainavolo.
Yeah, I talked to Henry a lot because obviously it's senior day. This week is going to be his last game along with Cook. I mean, talking to both the seniors, it was good to get their perspective on things. And he just talked about the idea of coming in with guys like Jackson Kirkland and then later like Corey Luciano coming in and being able to play with a couple of other seniors, a couple other graduates, and how that's been really, really important to him. The idea of coming back and how maybe, you know, this time last year, I don't think he necessarily thought that he'd be coming back for another year, and how that's turned into be a real godsend for him and how it's turned out to be better than he could have imagined. And just the idea of playing Colorado and just really finishing this thing off at Husky Stadium the way he needs to in order to make sure, because they, you know, this whole thing, Kim, they talked at the Oregon thing, and you saw it on their hype video afterwards, you know, and DeBoer's talking about it. He goes, guys, these are games that you're going to be talking about 10, 20, 30 years from now. Well, as big as that Oregon game was, they're still going to be talking about that the senior day game coming up this weekend 10, 20 years, 30 years from now. And that's going to be a situation where Henry Bainavolo wants to leave it all out there on the field and wants to make sure that he leaves things the right way.
Yeah, and Scott, I think Henry Bainavolo may be the most taken-for-granted player on the team. I didn't think there was any way he was coming back with the way his knees are. His knees are not good at all. Somebody said the one is just pretty much bone on bone.
Yep.
And I didn't anticipate him coming back, but he's just been a stalwart out there, and he hasn't missed much time at all. He's played every game. And
well, having Nate Kaleppo be able to play right guard has been able to keep the wear and tear off of Bainavolo's legs too, and that's been huge. In that Oregon State game, I think Kaleppo played the entire fourth quarter, along with Mateo Mele. So the nice thing is you're getting reps for younger guys who are going to now be your heir apparents at those positions. But I agree, Kim. I didn't think he was coming back. I don't think anybody around the program thought he was coming back.
And speaking of the heir apparents angle, which is a really good segue right into this, I asked him specifically about the Peyton Henry arc, redemption arc, because he'd be one of the few guys that would have been there and remembered it. What I had forgotten was that he actually played in that game. Sophomore season, 2018, he was in there. Do you know what the first play he was that was in there? Because essentially he admitted that he played in that game in the same role that what we're seeing with Kieran Hatchett right now. Kind of an auxiliary tackle, extra guy out there. Very first play that he was out there was the Savon Ahmed reverse touchdown.
Yeah.
And he talked about that, and it was a good conversation with Henry.
Well, the thing with Henry, you know, as bad as his knee is right now, boy, down the road, he's if you've never met Henry, he's a big dude. Was he 6'5"?
At least 6'5".
Yeah, but he'll probably do the Henry Roberts.
He's an Islander, dude.
Was he 320?
I would bet Henry, if he stays in shape, I mean, he could be like me and go way up in size. But if Henry, eats right and stays in shape, he's probably 6'6", 270, I would think, in that range.
Coolest hair on the team? Does he have it?
I don't know. There's a lot of cool hair.
I give him cool hair awards.
Okay.
Yeah.
we also had a chance to talk to coaches and real interesting conversation.
You're forgetting a player.
Who's that?
We talked to Peyton Henry.
Yeah, talked to
Peyton. And who he got a text from?
Well, yeah, he got a text from Chris Peterson.
Yeah, and for a Chris Peterson, okay, granted, I know he's only, what, 3 years removed from the team. But for Chris Peterson to go out of his way to send a text, besides that, he's the only one who picked Oregon in the pregame show, right?
Jordan Spieth.
Well, but that was on ESPN.
That was on ESPN, right? Yeah.
So,
but still, I thought that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I know. I wonder what Jordan Spieth ended up the week at. They always show my
my pet theory on that was because his caddy is from Tacoma, mm-hmm. Michael Greller.
Oh yeah,
and so maybe it was a nod to him, or maybe he's so tight into the Texas program, he just wanted to pick Washington because of Sark.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Either way.
But as far as Peyton Henry, I mean, he just was like, for him to go out of his way to send me a text like that, it just meant so much to me. And Peterson went through the ringer with him because he brought him on as a walk-on, ended up putting him on scholarship eventually, and then left. And Henry is kind of had to go through a lot of things since he's been at the University of Washington. And unfortunately, a lot of people only remembered him for his miss at Oregon in 2018.
Yeah.
And now I think a lot of people are forgetting that and just focusing on what he did on Saturday.
Well, talking to Henry about that, Henry Bainavalu, he was like, hey, if people want to think about that 2018 game, that's fine. He goes, I just don't think that's what people are going to be thinking about anymore. They're going to be thinking about the make and the win and how big that was.
Well, it's also interesting talking to Peyton Henry, and he's the same guy.
Yeah.
He's got that Kalen DeBoer mentality where he's just pretty even keel. Yeah,
that's what you want out of a kicker, though,
I just
right?
did my job. I just did my job.
Ice in the veins.
Well, and you asked him about you, because you were the one who did the interview. You asked him about, was he thinking about it when he went out there? And he goes, no. It wasn't even in the back of my mind. I just went out there and did my job. Every kick is a different kick.
Well, the other interesting stat I got from Tony Castricone, over the past 2 years, from 45 yards and in, including points after touchdowns, 95 of 96.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge number.
It is.
95 of 96 for every kick.
But outside of 40, and that there's a lot of kicks that happen in the 40s. He's been much better these last couple years, but he was not very good with
that. But even just, if you think about it, even what happens if you get a kick blocked?
Yeah.
Well, that accounts for that one right there, but that's never really happened.
Yeah, so he's been as steady as you could ask for the past. I mean, if you can get those kind of numbers, if they can get those kind of numbers out of a kicker next year, they're good with that.
Yeah, and that's probably Grady Gross. Yeah, it's probably Grady Gross.
The guy that everyone's ripping on for not being able to kick it in the end zone.
Well, and they even said, I mean, so he kicks it out of bounds, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, are you kidding me? I mean, how hard is it to put in the middle? But the problem is they want him to directional kick it. And because of the way they said there wasn't a lot of wind, but it was really tough getting it deep on that side.
Well, it must have been coming out of the west.
Well, the Oregon kicker.
He did it twice.
Yeah. The Oregon kicker was he was obviously being asked to do the same thing.
Yeah. And so it's sometimes it just happens, man. These guys, even if he's got a strong leg, sometimes they're just not going to hit it right.
Yeah. For those who just read the quotes, you're missing out unless you're listening to the audio. And the conversation I had with Jamarcus Shepherd is there's some true gold in there, talking about the uniform choice. And we talked a little bit of that with Coach DeBoer, but Jamarcus Shepherd really went in depth on that, where it sounded like Oregon was trying to screw with them a little bit. And when they announced their uniform combination that they thought Washington was originally going to wear their gold pants and white tops. Now, I don't know if it was the conventional white tops that they've worn
the
on the road,
or the purple,
or if it was the white with the gold. But when they saw that they thought that there wasn't going to be enough contrast. So they actually had to go to the league and have that approved to wear the all purples and to get that contrast. And when I asked Jamarcus Shepherd if he thought it made a difference, I mean, he was pretty adamant. Absolutely, he thought it made a difference. And some people I also talked to said, Washington was kind of making a little bit of a recruiting statement down there too, wearing the all purples.
Well, I wonder what the deadline is for those things. Once you find out kind of what, you know, to me, it reminded me again of ASU. It's like, so if you're wearing if you're Oregon, what is considered a normal home or away, whatever?
Nothing is normal.
Compared to, like ASU, when they wore those desert colors, that was clearly a different thing from what they normally wear, their maroon and yellow or whatever. But Oregon, it seems like they change things so often, every week. What is considered a normal? Would it be the regular green? Would it be the highlighter green? Would it be the black, whatever. I mean, I remember in the 2016 game, they wore the Webfoot things, which I think they must have probably burned as soon as that game was over.
Well, yeah.
But considered a standard Oregon uniform? I have no idea nowadays. I
mean, they don't even know what a standard one is.
What is it?
With Jamarcus, again, just it's not so much what he said, but it was the tone and the emotion that he said that makes all the difference in the world that you're not going to be able to capture on just reading the text. So I highly, highly, highly recommend everybody listen to that, because he also talked about, being takers versus receivers, as well as when Taj Davis made the catch, and he pretty much broke that down. It was real interesting, his conversation with Taj Davis on that catch. So highly, highly, highly recommend.
I would have been curious to see if he felt Jalen McMillan would have made that play against Christian Gonzalez like in week one.
Yeah.
You know, because this taker's mentality has been something that's really been fostered throughout the entire season. But I'm wondering if that's a play that they make in week one compared to now.
Well, what's interesting about that play with Taj Davis is I'm on the sidelines, and the way the coaches get out sometimes, I get a little bit blocked, right? So when that play was made, I saw Jalen McMillan out near the sidelines, and I saw Panix throw it, and it went way over McMillan's head. And I thought he was throwing it out of bounds, so I kind of looked away, and all of a sudden I see Taj Davis running by me. I thought he threw it out of bounds at the angle I had, because I couldn't see Taj, but he ran right by me, and he was getting close to the sidelines, which he talks about as well.
Yeah, I didn't. I haven't seen the Taj stuff yet, but what else more can be said about it? I mean, talk about it being a whole shot. I mean, you watch it, somebody freeze framed it, and that he had such a small window to throw that ball in, and he puts it right on the money so that Taj doesn't even have to break stride. Just catches it and goes. And
Also real interesting talking to Coach Inge, and he said with Ty Thompson going in there, they knew that, he had the feet to run, but he said we were going to force him to throw the ball. And he pretty much said on the Alex Cook play, we knew what that play was. We knew what it was.
You mean Knicks?
Yeah, the Knicks play. They knew what it was. So interesting talking to Coach Inge about that. And then also talked to him a little bit. I don't know if people remember this, but on that final drive of Oregon, Javion Green, he's lucky he didn't get a personal foul for hitting the guy out of bounds.
It was close.
No, it was. Have been surprised if they had called one.
It was late. Yeah, it was right in front of him. It was right in front of Husky bench. He goes, yeah, they saw it up close and personally. So
I'm glad. You know what? I thought that ref crew for the Pac-12. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think that was one of the best ref games.
You didn't notice him?
Yeah.
Well, it's the one where it's because the lead official isn't Domineer in the head like Mothershed or some of those other guys, where it's like they just I don't know what their motivation is.
But I mean, the Pac-12 normally throws a flag on that play.
Yeah,
and they didn't, and I was shocked.
I was surprised.
And then I started to think back. I started to think back, and I'm like, I haven't seen one call yet where I've disagreed with with the
or
with
the fact that they didn't call a lot of holding calls, and I think they were letting a lot of things go between the tackle and the tackle box, which is fine. Because, again, the coaches won't care one bit if it's called or not called as long as it's consistent. That's all they care about.
I also talked to Coach Inge about the dividends that game is going to pay down the roads for a guy like Javion Green.
Yeah.
I mean, he got a lot of playing time in a big game.
No, it will, because he's played in a big game now. He was beat several times in that game. Only got really hurt by it once on the long touchdown. And on that play, there was another guy open down the middle, too. Yeah. So it was really whoever Knicks wanted to throw the ball to.
Yeah, and I talked to Juice Brown this week about the same thing. I mean, he talked about, you know, they're just there. Knicks guys up. I mean, there was really no question about it. I mean, no Irvin, no Banks. You know, they're just having to, you know, get going. And the veterans were a huge part of keeping those guys' spirits up, because when you have that player over the top with Franklin scoring on Green, that's where, you know, if it's a true freshman like Javon, it's easy to go right in the tank. And for them to come back and to play the way that he played, and to really kind of grind through the win, really says something about him, and it will be a big thing. Now, the third down play with Knicks and AC, I mean, I asked Juice specifically about that, if they saw something and saw it coming, because I told him, I said, you know, if you go back and look at the TV copy, everyone in the world thought that that's what Bo Nix was going to do. And he goes, well, I don't know, you'd have to ask Alex about that, you know, if he saw that coming or not. I said, well, we did. But I said, from your guys' standpoint, I mean, you changed things up, because he did say flat out. He said, if you looked earlier in the game when Knicks was taking that taking the ball, they had Mish Powell in the spot where Alex Cook was in on that third down play. Mm-hmm. So they clearly made an adjustment on that.
Well, there was a timeout before that call too. So
yeah, but they made an adjustment, clear adjustment, because it wasn't the case. They hadn't schemed that way earlier in the game.
You had a chance to talk to Coach Huff?
Yeah. He just mainly talked about Henry Bainavalu, Corey Luciano, and Jackson Kirkland, and how this is his last game with them. And I'm not going to say he got emotional, because offensive line coaches aren't supposed to cry, but I could tell he was starting to feel it a little bit. Just, this is my last time I'm going to be able to coach these guys at Husky Stadium. And he says it's really hard. Senior day is really hard, because these guys have meant so much to this program, and they've done so many things. They've been through battles. We've all been through battles together. I mean, if you think about it, I'm pretty sure Bainavalu and Jackson Kirkland were in his first class.
They've been, yeah.
Because if I remember correctly, that Strouser was the one who offered Jackson, and they signed him, and then he left. He went to Denver, and Scott Huff got brought in, and so Scott had these two guys, two huge guys, but very inexperienced and very raw guys that he's had to work with, and so he's been through the wars with these guys.
Yeah, and you also had a chance to talk to Lee Marks.
Yeah, Lee Marks. Talked a little bit about Wayne Talapapa, what he's been going through, how the team has embraced him.
For those who don't know, tell
people. Yeah, well, there was a shooting at the University of Virginia. A former player came back and killed three current players and wounded.
Doesn't sound like they knew each other at all.
No, wounded like one or two others. I don't know if it was football players that they wounded, but there's three dead football players.
And I'm sure Wayne knew everyone.
He absolutely did, because they were all sophomores or older, so he knew most of those guys. So just tough for him, but, you know, Mark said, you know, he's mature. If you think about it, Wayne Talapapa is 24 years old,
yeah,
because he took a 2-year mission and then spent 4 years at, and I think he did a redshirt and then 4 years at, or 3 years, he did 4 years there, but 3 years of playing time at, so he's like 24, 25.
He's taking graduate classes here,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, he is, definitely. So, it's just the team has surrounded him and, you know, put their arms around him and helped him get through this. And just talked about, you know, how the team's playing. I asked about the hole that Wayne Talapapa had to run through, and apparently Talapapa came back to the sidelines after that, after the big touch, the very first touchdown, and he said, "Coach, you could have ran through that." So he said, yeah, it was very well blocked. But he goes, we have to take advantage of those things. And we did. And that's what our job is. And so I asked about the missing out on fourth or third down a couple times, really third and shorts. And he said, you know, he goes, there's really not any frustrations because we won the game. But he says there were missed opportunities, and those are things we're coaching against right now.
Anything else from the coaches on Wednesday?
No, just, again, like I said, I spoke to Coach Brown and just, you know, got the sense, general sense of just kind of what they're going through now. And he said Colorado's going to be, you know, you can look at their record and you can come to, you know, draw conclusions all you want. He goes, but they're probably about as multiple as in terms of schemes and in terms of formations and what the pictures that they're going to show us as any team that we've seen this year. So he goes, they're going to try to scheme us. They're going to try to get us out of position, and we need to come ready. And, you know, and he also talked about his seniors because Perryman and Cook are the guys in his room, and talked a little bit about what senior day is going to mean for those guys and just, you know, trying to also get the new guys up to speed as well.
Quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of recruiting. There's a little bit of stuff going on in recruiting, as well as some basketball. And do we have a game time yet on Washington State? That and more when we return. It's the guys from Dogman.com on Dogman Radio.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back. It's the guys from Dogman.com. I'm Kim Grinnells, along with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. Recruiting. What's going on, Scott?
There's a little bit. There's going to be a couple official visitors on campus this weekend. One is one we've known about for a while. He's a commit. Devin Bryant, the linebacker out of St. John Bosco, he's coming up for his official visit. Hadn't taken one. Honestly, when he told me, yeah, I'll be up there for my official, I was like, oh, I didn't even realize you hadn't taken it, because I thought everybody who had committed had taken their officials. But Keith Reynolds has also not taken it, and he might be up this weekend too.
Well, so, ironically enough, I don't know if you guys saw this, but he had an Instagram post where it said he was committed to Washington, and I got a little confused because that happened literally in the last 24 hours or so.
Oh.
And it was like, haven't you been committed for like a long time?
Yeah. But
and
there's also a JUCO DB who is supposed to be up this weekend, Channing Canada out at Trinity Valley. Down in Texas, he's supposed to come up and visit.
Hey, real quick, with Bryant, same high school as the offensive lineman that...
Defensive lineman
that decommitted?
That UW dropped, yep.
Okay. I'll say decommitted. You can say dropped, yeah. But I'll say decommitted.
Let's just say it was a mutual parting of the ways.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just say that. And nothing bad. It's that he did not have a good senior year.
Well, I wouldn't even say it's that he didn't have a good senior year. He just wasn't starting on a team now that's loaded, but isn't starting, and I think Washington wanted a little bit more from the guys that they're going to bring in because they don't have a lot of spots.
Over under on how many high school or JC guys that they bring
high
in.
High school or JC?
Over under.
Three.
Yeah, I'm going to go two.
Okay.
I'm going to go two, and if they're going to bring in a guy, it's got to be, they're going to have to be a special.
Tayshawn Lyons is back in on campus this weekend. Now, he's already taken his official. He's coming up to watch game atmosphere. So
over under on how many guys they bring in from the transfer portal?
Four or five.
And that's, yeah, I'm thinking five, and I'm guessing three of those might be corners.
I don't think there's gonna be that many.
Yeah, I think at least two.
Two seems more likely, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's just one.
Yeah,
let's say they get Channing Canada, who's coming up on his official, they're not going to take two more portal guys.
Well, it just seems like it would be like for like numbers, right? So depending on what their attrition is,
yeah,
that's the number that you'd want to fill.
Yeah, my guess says keep an eye on corners, a running back, and maybe a defensive lineman.
And maybe a tight end.
Yeah, maybe a tight end.
Maybe a linebacker.
Yeah.
And maybe an edge. I mean, there's a lot of different guys that the edge spots are interesting because Anthony James is projected as a defensive lineman by 247, and he told me he's been playing a lot of three tech this year.
Okay.
So he's not, I looking at his frame, I don't see an edge guy. I see a defensive tackle or a defensive end.
Is he just a bigger version of like a Voit Tanufi?
Yes. Yeah, he's kind of that guy. Jacob Lane currently is the only edge in this class. And Washington might want to find an edge. But they've got a lot of young guys, so they're losing Jeremiah Martin. A lot of people think that they're going to lose ZTF. I just don't know if I see that. He's not ready, but he might go
be
off
done.
To play.
Might
some.
Be just done.
I would certainly think Trice is a bigger option to run than ZTF.
And see, I think Trice has one more year, knows he needs one more year. Savelle Smalls is there, but he's entering his fourth year now. He'll be a fourth-year junior, right? Or whatever. And then you've got Maurice Himes. You've got Afoa Asuai.
Oh, yeah. Sakai.
Yeah, Sakai. And I'm trying to think if there's any other edge guys that were. Oh, Holtzclaw.
Lance. So
they've got some young guys, but none of them are proven.
By the way, Lance is getting bigger. I don't know if you know.
When he walked by me today,
he's getting bigger.
But is he going to be more like? Do you think he's more like a Josh Shirley type guy when it comes down
Holtzclaw?
To it? Yeah.
I think he's got the size.
Or Travis Feeney.
I think you want him to be more like Travis Feeney because Feeney could play the run a little bit better than Shirley could, but. Man, Shirley was a one-trick pony, but
he was really good.
He was really good at that one trick.
We do not have a game time for the Washington State for the Apple Cup. They chose to take the 6-day window. All indications there is it's either going to be the 12 or 7 game, one of the two.
And who here between the three of us are voting that it's probably going to be 7:30?
It's probably going to
Don't say go with your heart and what you want it to be. Go with what your brain says.
Yeah, my gut says 7:30.
My gut says 7:30.
Yeah.
Well, if Oregon beats Utah this weekend, then I suspect that they're going to want the Oregon State game to be the 12:30 or 1 o'clock game. And if that's the case, then the Apple Cup gets relegated, and it's because of Washington State.
What's the 4 o'clock? Is that the USC UCLA?
No, that's this weekend.
Oh, that's this weekend. What's the 4 o'clock game for Pac-12?
Maybe Stanford. Is it Stanford Cal?
I don't know. Stanford and Cal don't play.
I'd have to go back and look. But there's been some that have already been scheduled, and I forget which ones
those
have been.
That's ridiculous. So. Yeah.
Quick basketball update. Game tonight against Cal Baptist. Saw a little bit of them the night before last against CSUN. I don't even know who CSUN is.
Cal State Northridge?
Noah Williams looks like he's going to be out for a few weeks. Keon Brooks, sounds like he practiced on Sunday, did not play on Monday. I don't know if we'll see him tonight or not. My gut says just go ahead and hold him out another game and then play him against Fresno State.
I mean, they may want to get him a few minutes before going on the road because those next couple games are going to be pretty important games.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting if we see the Twin Towers like we did on Monday night and see if we
see. Is that what you're calling them now?
The Twin Towers are the two-headed monster is what Hopkins calls them.
Yeah.
So we'll see how much.
I like Twin Towers.
So that made a difference. And then I've been talking about Keon Manyfield. I've been telling you guys for a long time. That guy is just, some people, compare him to Isaiah Thomas. And I say that the difference between Keon Manyfield and Isaiah Thomas is Isaiah Thomas worked himself into that kind of player he was because he's just nonstop work. I think Keon Manyfield is a little bit different. He's just got a little bit of gifted to him where he's just got that knack. So he's got, I think he's a lot more talented than Isaiah. I think Isaiah, it's hard to beat his work ethic, but it's going to be interesting to watch Keon Manyfield because, boy, he just seems to have a little bit of that it factor going on.
Well, John Rothstein, who's one of the big national analysts out there, he takes the first few weeks and looks at the non-conference guys and kind of watches some of these, games that maybe the normal person wouldn't normally see. And you know, he just goes, there are some guys out there that you buy stock on that you just didn't know about. You know, these are the ones that kind of come out of the woodwork. And he's already said, Keon Manyfield, buy stock now. So that's a pretty strong validation for what his potential could be.
We talked about Kalen DeBoer and Peyton Henry just having that even keel, and Keon Brooks is quite a bit like that too. He doesn't seem to change. He doesn't get real high. He doesn't get real animated. Well, doesn't put his head down.
You put the video out when they had the technical issues.
Oh yeah,
against Utah Tech.
He was doing the Russell Wilson imitation.
Yeah, he was just out there kind of doing his own thing, kind of in
high
his
knees.
Own head and
high knees.
Yeah, and then so yeah, he's just, you know, a true freshman. He's just a young kid. He doesn't know any better. He's not burdened with wisdom yet. So he's just going out there and using his God-given abilities, and so far it's worked out really, really well. I mean, 26 points in the last game. Not bad for a true freshman.
Well, the other thing I noted, you know, and I talked about was, you know, when the shot clock is down at under 8, Jamal Bey and P.J. Fuller have no hesitation whatsoever in passing the ball to Manyfield. None.
Yeah, but you'd like to see your veterans take control of that a little bit, but...
Terrell Brown. Brown's not passing it.
Yeah, but does that? Well, that's right. But does that reflect on Manyfield, or does that reflect more on Fuller and Bey? Because to me, you would want your veterans to have the ball in that moment. Because to be honest with you, he creates. Yeah. I don't think he's a spot up guy, even though he's shown the ability to hit the three. To me, Corn Johnson's more of the spot up guy. If you're gonna play a one and a two. Right now,
who do you want?
With Noah out, that's Corin's going to end up having to fill that role a little bit.
Right now, game on the line, clock shot running down. Who do you want to have the ball right now?
Well, I would say Keon Brooks, but if he's not available, then you definitely put it in Manyfield's hands, because one of the things you can do is that he can go the lane and then he can simply lob it up to one of the Twin Towers if they're in the game. Because you know Kepnang's going to flush it, and you would expect Mia, if he gets into a good position, he should be able to flush it too.
Wrap it up, Scott Eklund.
Good week for the Huskies, man. I mean, they've gotten so much national press. I've seen them on College Football Live. I've seen them on they talked about them on Audible.
All the podcasts.
Yeah, all the
everywhere.
Podcasts and everything about how big of a win it was. And I, you know, for a long time, Husky fans have had to root for the team that played Oregon to beat Oregon so they wouldn't make it to the playoff or whatever it was. And this year it's Washington being that team. And so Washington fans are going to revel in this for a long time. I texted with two players' parents. One was a current player, one was a former player. And I said, hey, I'm watching the replay of the game right now. And they both sent back, I've watched it 3 times already, so yeah. I don't know what's taking you so long. But good weekend for the Huskies. Can they get focused against Colorado? I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll be focused and come out and ready to play. And it sounds like the coach has been pretty happy with the response of the players.
You know, watching the game replay 3 times takes a lot of time. Unless you have a setup like mine, I just put it on all 3 TVs.
Yeah.
So. How does that speed things up?
Well, he's watching it 3 times, but...
Each one's delayed.
At the same time.
Oh, I see. He's like literally back to back to back?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the one guy says his wife didn't understand why, and I said you could just stop
just
there.
Just start right there.
I was going to say, wouldn't I see somewhere on the boards where someone knows someone else on the Alabama team, and they were watching the game on the bus back or something? And they were actually rooting for Washington. I thought that was really interesting.
And one thing that I also heard from a guy who's pretty involved with recruits in the area was that when they heard that Washington won the game, like, kids were just pumping their fists and excited. These are recruits. These aren't guys who are just normal players. These are recruits.
Yeah, and this is why I really caution fans, as excited as they should be, and I don't mean this to temper enthusiasm, because I think you should still be fired up about a win like this. This is going to reap the rewards from the 2024 class on down. This is not about
2023. No,
this is not about what's going to happen in the next month.
Most of those kids have decided already.
Yes, most of those guys. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think there might be a lot of fans out there that think, oh, this is going to help them turn a big time recruit or something like that. It may. I'm not saying that can't happen. But I'm saying where they're gonna really feel the rewards of this is going down the line.
I talked to Brandon Huffman this week, and I asked him if, you know, how things have been going. And he goes, "It's good for me. It's great because I only have one 4-star in my region who isn't committed somewhere." And guess who that is? Wide receiver Tayshaun Lyons, who is visiting Washington this weekend.
Yeah.
So he said it's, you know, he goes, it's pretty easy for me. I don't have a lot of big time kids that are still uncommitted.
Yeah.
Wrap it up, Chris Feathers.
Yeah, I just think that it's important to understand, and I think that this is something that I feel pretty strong about, that, you know, the senior night comes at a great time for them. Because right on the heels of such an emotional win, coming back and knowing that you have to prepare for a team that's 1-9, I just don't get the sense that this team is going to let the seniors down.
No.
I just don't get – I just think that things –
And the seniors
so tight,
won't let them let it down.
And the seniors won't let them. And so I think it just – the timing of this game is great for Washington, not necessarily because they need a breather or something like that, although there are a bunch of banged up guys. I mean, Alex Cook said himself – he had a tough time getting off that plane because there's a lot of guys that are banged up. And, I mean, they're, like, physically getting off the plane. But, you know, I think it comes at a good time. Hopefully, if they can get out to a big lead, they can rest a lot of those guys for the Apple Cup, which I think would be huge as well. So I think there's a lot of benefits going into this game and the way that it works out in the time frame. But in just talking to the players and coaches this week, it's just – it was fun to get their perspectives on a win like that because – wins like that don't happen very often, and we've seen it. I mean, we've talked, a lot of people were talking about what was the best win before that was probably the Apple Cup, the snow game back in 18. Before that, maybe the Stanford game in 16. You know, maybe one of the Pac-12 title games, you know, something like that. But, you know, they don't come around all that often. And to be able to really bask in that and to really talk to these guys and get their full perspectives on what it means for them, not only going forward, but what are they going to think about maybe 10, 20, 30 years from now, has been really, really cool to talk to them about.
Quick question, just real quick, don't explain, just answer the question. Will we see a backup quarterback on Saturday, and at what point?
Yes, third quarter.
Chris Fetters?
End of third quarter.
Okay, yes, I'll agree. End of third quarter. I was going to say, I was thinking leaning more quarter, like beginning of the fourth quarter. Because, I mean, typically, even depending on how far it is, I still think that they would want to make sure that they get three quarters of work in.
That they're sharp.
Most of those guys.
So we're in one of the back rooms back in Heck Ed, just doing our podcast. And we got Mike Vorrell over there trying to work and having to listen to us. Any comments, Mike? Anything you want to add?
You mispronounced my last name.
It's Vorrell.
It's Vorrell, thanks very much. Last time I'm on your show.
I thought it was Vorrell.
It can be for you, Scott.
Mike V.
It's for you, though.
Viral. Mike V. Mike V.
Viral. Mike Viral.
Mike Viral.
There we go.
Yeah.
Let's get it viral.
He's a millennial.
Anyways, Colorado coming up, and then Wazoo, and we'll see where Washington winds up for a bowl game. So,
any early thoughts about a bowl?
I'm thinking Alamo.
You're not reaching for the stars and going Rose Bowl.
So much has to happen for them to go to the Rose Bowl.
Sure.
I have a hard time seeing it.
I am cool with San Diego. I am cool with Dallas, Texas.
So my feeling is, San Antonio.
Some people are saying Cotton Bowl.
If Washington was able to defeat all the odds and get to the Rose Bowl or get to the championship game and then lose to like USC, for instance, would that get them in the Rose Bowl?
No. Well, it depends, because if USC, from what I saw, Washington can only play USC in the title game.
Right.
Because of all the things that have to happen.
That's right.
So, that would mean USC.
UCLA probably, is their biggest
USC
impediment right
USC would
now.
Have one loss at that point, right. assuming they would have one loss at that point.
Yeah.
Then USC would go to the championship or the CFP. And that does not include the Rose Bowl this year, correct?
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, that's the only way that they would do it.
Yeah.
Not going down that rabbit hole. So
yeah.
Just not that,
there's way too much that has to happen.
If people really want to break this down, you want USC to beat UCLA, and you want Oregon to beat Utah.
Can't go there.
Because Washington has to have the teams that they don't play this year, have at least one of them lose.
Yeah. So the thing is... some people have said the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, well, why not?
And I didn't know Washington was possible.
We'd love Cotton Bowl was the site of arguably the biggest rainstorm I've ever seen in my entire life.
But it
life.
Wasn't the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, it was.
It was the original Cotton
Bowl. It wasn't the game wasn't the Cotton Bowl, but it was in the Cotton Bowl.
It was in the Cotton
Bowl. Yes, yeah. It was in the stadium. Yeah, just,
and didn't you have a tornado warning?
Yes. Oh, it was ridiculous. I'll just never they had forget. A shelter in place.
When they put us in the basement, and I looked at the guy and said, how bad is this? And he just looked at me stone-faced and goes, not good.
Yeah.
Go, oh no, we went out to the concourse after we were able to actually get out of the room we were in, and it's coming down like I have never seen before.
Well, the best part, Chris, is when we were doing post game, everybody's phone went off. Everybody's
because of the tornado alert.
Emergency warning.
Everybody's phone went off. Like everybody's. So it was pretty crazy. So I'm down for Texas. I'm down for San Diego.
So Alamo Bowl, Cotton Bowl, San Diego, or Holiday Bowl, or
and Cotton Bowl's in Dallas, right?
Yeah.
Because apparently, I think the number one Texas barbecue joint's in Fort Worth, or just outside.
Please, please, no El Paso. Please, no El Paso.
Sun Bowl. I think they would have to almost lose both games to finish that low.
Don't speak that into existence, Chris.
I have traveled so much.
Well, let's put it, hey guys, so I'm going to put this out there. I am going to put this out there. If they lose to Colorado, they deserve El Paso. I will put that out there for the record.
Yeah. All right.
All right, let's call it good.
Let's call it good. Hey, thanks for tuning in. For all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells on Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund and Mike V over in the corner. Go Dogs.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.